Is that better? All right. I'll get that figured out. But I wanted to just say thank you for inviting me to be here with you this week. It's been a great week, and I've really been encouraged by the things that I've heard and seen, and I appreciate all the hard work that has gone into this, and for your attendance as well. Tomorrow I'll be headed back to Tennessee, and just it's been a pleasure getting to know many of you. Now, I will say this. Wayne mentioned when the first day something about some things that I have going. And so I've had a whole lot of people say things to me, and I said, just hold off, and I'll just tell you all at once. I do a weekly email devotional. It's called Mercy Mail, and I've done it for about 11 years now. If you would like to receive that, just write your email address down. You can sign yourself up, but it's easier just to write it down and give it to me, and I'll add you to that. I won't flood your inbox. They're short, brief, hopefully relevant little things that you can use. Great for devotionals, invitations, that kind of thing. So if you'd like to receive those, just, do I dare say, use one of the attendance cards in the pew in front of you and just write your email down and give it to me, and I'll get that to you. Also, it's been good. You know, I'm a little leery when I go someplace away from home, because a couple years ago, I went to preach in Alabama, and I left church, drove as quickly as I could. I was supposed to do a seminar on internet safety for the church down there. There were four sessions lined up, and I got there Sunday afternoon, and I sat down in the youth minister's office. He had formerly worked as a summer intern with me for 2 years. And so we knew each other. We had a lot of fun together and joked for a couple years. And so I walk in his office. I sit down, and we're talking. Next thing I know, this guy comes in the doorway. He has a hoodie on, a toboggan, a bandana over his face, and sticks a gun out and says, give me all your money. And I went, you're not getting me on this. I thought it was a joke. You know, I thought the other guy set it up. And he said, no. I said, give me all your money, and went up and pushed it. And I said, Reed, you're not going to trick me on this. And then I saw Reed said, here, take my money. You can have mine. And I thought, well, that's a strange response if it's his joke. And then I realized it was true, and we got robbed that day. And as he walked out the door, he stood at the doorway and held the gun at our heads and said, I hate to do this. And I thought, man, we have had it. But I guess he meant he hated to rob us. But and then he just turned and ran. But ever since that day, I don't want to go through that again. So here's my wallet. Here's the contents of my wallet. Wayne Jones, I hear, is loaded. So if you have any thoughts along that line, see him. Leave me alone. All right. Well, we've been talking about the preacher and his family for the past couple days. And the first day we talked about the preacher and his wife, relationship there that needs to exist, and hopefully some practical suggestions that will help along that line. Yesterday, we talked about children, how to be better parents, and raising our children so that they can someday be turned back over to God. Today is more of a hodgepodge. It is part some things that I didn't get to say in the other lessons. Part of it is some notes from the preacher and his work class that I teach at the School of Preaching. Just some practical, I hope it's practical for you, pieces of advice that have to do more so today in dealing with your family in relation to the church. You know, we all have our local works. We're working with a congregation of people. We bring our family into interaction with a group of people, and there's some practical things that I think might help us along those lines. First of all, let me just say this, because people will say sometimes, and maybe you've heard it, and it was touched on the other day, and I'm going to say a little bit more about it in just a little bit, but let me just say this. Sometimes people get involved in some playful banter about the work of a preacher, but that banter lowers the dignity and the respect for what you're doing. I don't engage in that, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but sometimes I'll have people say, oh, what a job. You know, you guys, man, it's easy. What do you do all day long? You know, like you only work on Sunday and the rest of the week you have off. So I'll hear people say this all the time. What do you do all day long? Well, you know, I don't want to engage in banter that diminishes God's divine plan. But I also want to be polite, but I want to make a point. And so you know what I say, and maybe this will be helpful to you. I say, you know, you're right. Preaching is one of the easiest jobs a person could ever have. Because you know what my job is? I get to go around and brag on Jesus. That's my job. How hard is that? Man, it's not hard to brag on Jesus, is it? He was perfect. And that's our job, guys. We have the privilege of bragging on Jesus to other people. And when they don't know what to do with that, you know, when they're wanting to kind of smart off and go down a road, that they don't know how to quite respond to that kind of a thing. But anyway, I love to preach, and I love to have the opportunity to speak and brag about Jesus. And here are some things that I think will help us in our works with our families. And point number one, serve God for nothing, all right? You go to a congregation, you begin to work there, things get crazy, people start acting like people, and you know, you can get discouraged, and people act ugly and do the wrong things. They don't listen to what you say. You can tell them exactly what they need to do to make something go well, and they do exactly the opposite. And you're sitting there thinking, I told them Sunday, if they just listen. And there are times when we can just really get discouraged. You do the very best. You stay up all night. You study. You come to the and present the best you can, the material that you've studied. And you stand at the door, and people take pot shots at you. Have you ever had that happen? You just get weary with some of that stuff. I want to tell you this, serve God for nothing. I want you to develop that resolve. And the guys that go to school at East Tennessee School of Preaching, that's one of the things I tell them in this class is, if you can be dissuaded from preaching, you probably don't need to preach. You need to have a resolve that if it's you and you alone standing and speaking for Jesus, you're okay with that. Your dedication to Jesus should not hinge on external circumstances created by other people. Let me give you an example. Job in the Old Testament, faithful child of God, God's proud of him, kind of throws his arm around him and says to the devil, have you considered my servant Job? Man, this guy is upright in all of his ways. He's a good man. And the devil says, well, yeah, no wonder. I mean, you build a hedge around him. You won't let anything bad happen to him. Who wouldn't serve you? And God says, no, you have him pegged wrong. He'll not turn his back if I let things happen to him. And the devil asks the question, will a man serve God for nothing? For nothing? God was convinced he would, and he did. He let the devil take everything from him but his life. And Job remained faithful. What if Job, when the trouble started, would have cursed God? What if Job was a man who, well, when everything was going his way and he was doing well and succeeding and all these things, I'm all for you, God. But as soon as some adversity enters his life, what if he then turned away from God and said, if this is what it means to be a child of God, I don't want anything of it. And he turns, we wouldn't be talking about Job today. The thing that makes Job remarkable is that Job, in spite of his circumstances, served God. It's great to serve God when people come out, pat you on the back and say, best sermon I ever heard. Great job. I really appreciate you. But I hear over and over again of preachers that get discouraged, they quit, they give up, they burn out, they say, I'm done, I'm tired of being treated like this, I'm this, that. And I understand discouragement. I understand those things are real. And if you get in that point and you get to the point where you're thinking, man, what's the use? You need to get with somebody and talk and get straightened around. But you don't need to quit. Don't quit. Serve God for nothing. If no one pats you on the back, you know, we talk about preaching in season and out of season. Could we also say serve in season and out of season? Do you only do right things and good things when people pat you on the back? What about that out of season? What are we going to do when it's out of season? I hope for your family's sake and for the church's sake that you will serve God for nothing. Make that determination and stick to that. Don't allow burnout or discouragement to stop you. Here's something else. Don't allow expectations of other people to determine how you're going to live your life. You're going to be working with a church and you've got a family. Don't allow the church to determine how you're going to conduct your family. And let me give you an example. There's no role in the Bible of a preacher's wife. Do you know of any qualifications? Is there a role? There's elders, deacons, preachers, and preachers' wives. I don't know of that. If the elders tried to force me to be a pastor, a shepherd, I wouldn't own that. That's their work. I'm going to do my work. I wouldn't allow them to put an unauthorized obligation or an unscriptural obligation on me that belongs to somebody else. I don't think we should let the church put unbiblical expectations on our wives either. Our wives need to be Christians. They need to be followers of Jesus, disciples of Christ. They need to do the good that they do and do it because they're children of God, not because, honey, you got to do that. You got to go to that shower, because what do they say if you don't go to the shower? Well, you've got to take this casserole over there, because what do they say if you don't take that casserole? You've got to go to this event with me, because if you... Listen, let them be Christians. And if it's within their power and ability and opportunity to do various things, let them do. But in our family, we have never lived with myself placing certain expectations on my wife. Now, the church may have some, but they learn, I'm not going to cower to an unbiblical role that I really, it's kind of, intent. What is it? You know, what are the expectations? Everybody has different. So my wife's just going to be a Christian, and she's going to do her best to serve God as a Christian, and I'm not going to lay anything more on her than that. Also, along that same line are your children. What's a PK? Preacher's kid. I didn't even know what that was until I got to college, and my dad's a preacher. I didn't grow up with any extra expectations on me. I never thought of myself as something different than all the other kids that I grew up with. And I appreciate my mom and dad for that. I don't ever remember them saying, you have to go to this because what will people think? You have to go to this because your dad's the preacher. You have to be involved in this because... I never once heard my parents bring up that distinction, and I appreciate that. Apparently, not everybody has the same upbringing, because I have heard from many bitter children who grew up in preachers' homes, and they resent, they're resentful because they were made to do this or that because their dad's situation and this. And listen, if your child needs to go someplace, they need to go because they're a Christian, not because they're the preacher's kid. And if they need to not be involved in something, it's because they're a disciple of Jesus, not because they're the preacher's kid. You need to teach your children to do right, not because of who you are, but because of who God is and who they are. And so don't allow people in the church to place undue and unbiblical expectations on your family or you, yourself. I remember specifically one time, my dad's been at the same place for 49 years preaching. And so I grew up there all my life. And I remember one time, it was a Sunday morning. We grew up, we didn't have any air conditioning in the preacher's house that's right next to the building. And so for years, we just had this kitchen fan that sucked the heat out. It didn't blow anything cold in. But we got these window air conditioners when I was a kid. And I thought, man, this is great. You know, we had window air conditioners. And I remember one Sunday morning, this knock on the side door. And I opened the door, and there's one of our members on the breezeway, and he said, "Can I speak to your dad?" And I said, "Yeah, just a second. Hey, Dad, this, you know, so-and-so wants you." And he went over there, and that guy said, "I noticed you had your air conditioners running this morning. I pay for the electricity that it takes to run those, and I don't think you ought to have those on this early in the day." I wish I would remember what my dad said. I don't. He might have turned them up higher, I don't know, but no. But, I mean, you have those kind of, who in the world, who tells somebody else how to do their house like that? Well, you'll have things, expectations placed on your families that are unrealistic, they're unfair, they're unbiblical. Don't cave to those. Be Christians. Also, here's another. This is a piece of advice. You may not agree with it, but this is something that I have found. Don't feel the need to tell your wife everything you know. Now, my greatest confidant is my wife. We talk about everything. We share. If I didn't have her to bounce things off of, sometimes I'd lose my mind, I guess. You know, I'm not saying, you know, to have this, wall between you. But there are some things that you will hear in an elders meeting or in counseling with a couple or in some other setting that I just don't want her to have to carry the burden of that. And so I don't tell her. It's bad enough to know myself, and I don't like knowing some of the things that I know. And the only thing that could do, I mean, she can't help in the situations that I'm describing. It's just going to be a weight that she has to carry and a challenge to overcome when she deals with that person. It'd be better off for her not to even know. And so sometimes I keep those things from her. Again, I'm not saying keep everything from her. There are times when you need to share things with your wife. And people were talking about confidentiality and counseling and so forth. When people come to me for counseling, they understand up front that I have the liberty to share some of these things and bounce them off of my wife. And if they're not good with that, then they can go talk to somebody else. But spare your wife from some of the things that are unnecessary burdens. Also, don't allow your children to hear you complain. And maybe this is why and where some of this bitterness comes in some of the people that I've talked to that grew up in a preacher's home, and boy, they just have bitterness toward the church. And I have to wonder if some of it is the result of Sunday afternoon car ride to the restaurant. Have you ever done that? I mean, you get in a car and you say, "You know what so-and-so said to me this morning?" And you start telling your wife all these things. And you know how they, do you know what they did? And we talk about our brethren and talk about how unkind or ungodly or how harsh certain people were. And there are our kids in the back seat listening to everything we say. And so what's their image of the church? they see him as a bunch of people that are making my mom and dad have headaches, and it can build resentment. In our house, and sometimes I've got the bruised shins to prove it, you know, you sit down at the supper table and you get to talking, and sometimes you're careless, and I'll start to tell, and then I'll get this kick under the table. It's like, not now. And, you know, sometimes we forget, and we remind each other, and we'll just cut each other off. And there's never any backlash due to that. There are things that need to be said and shared, but they need to be said and shared when the kids are in bed or when they're not there to hear. Give that gift to your children. Also, this is practical. I've learned this from experience. Don't use your family as an illustration without their approval, okay? I like to use illustrations. I think it draws people in, it grabs their attention, it helps to bring out Jesus, the master teacher, always taught in parables, stories, where you can say, oh, I get it. You know, they make the connection. When I mention something about my wife, you know what happens in a congregation? 400 heads go right to her. You know, what's her reaction going to be? Or if I mention my kids, everybody's looking at my kids. There was a time or two when I first started preaching that I sprung that on my wife. Didn't go over so well. I get approval before I use illustrations. And that's just, I think it's fair. And I think that's something that you ought to consider. Also, here's something. Don't think you can do, preachers, don't think you can do what Jesus couldn't do. What do I mean by that? Well, I think it's really presumptuous, because sometimes we get ourselves all bent out of shape and discouraged and so forth because we think we can do what Jesus himself couldn't do. Well, give me an example. All right, was Jesus able to convert all of his family to make them all believers, or at least at one point in his life? No, he wasn't. His brothers, even his mother, they came to take him away. They thought he'd lost his mind on one occasion. If Jesus couldn't make his family see it, then what makes you think you can? I mean, don't bear that burden, that guilt, like you're doing something wrong or haven't done enough because they're still unconverted. Jesus couldn't even do it. Let me give you another example. Jesus couldn't avoid sadness and sorrow in his life, right? He was a man of sorrows. Don't think that if you do all the right things that your life will be better, and that if you act in a certain way, or God, you know, if you're walking in a certain way, that God will just lay down a bed of roses for you. God hasn't promised heaven on earth. He promises heaven after earth. And if Jesus couldn't live in a bed of roses, then what makes us think we can? Jesus couldn't go without rest. He had to get away from the crowds and relax and pray. What makes us think we have to work 24/7 in order to be pleasing to God? What makes us think that to spend a little time and have some off time with family and so forth, what makes us think that we can't afford that? Jesus couldn't operate that way, and yet we try to do it. We rob our families sometimes by that kind of mentality. Jesus couldn't avoid making enemies, and yet we labor and worry and stress and go to great lengths trying not to make enemies, and there's nothing you can sometimes do about it. The point is, Jesus, if he can't do it, neither can we. And there, you know, in particular with your time, don't feel guilty because you take your day off. Don't feel guilty because you spend time with your children. I had a guy that probably you all would know, but he was a roommate of my dad's in college years ago. He was a missionary, spent some time in foreign land, and he said regretfully, I overheard him say one time, he said that he went to this place to try to save the people there, but in the process lost his own children. That's a sad situation. We don't want to neglect our families. I'll say this too. Be very cautious about the opposite sex, guys. Do you know what kind of devastation that can bring to your family? You know, you might think fun, exciting, exhilarating for a little bit. Let it get out and envision that. How are you going to face your kids? What are you going to tell your children? How are you going to face your wife? How are you going to face your mom and dad? How are you going to face the brethren at church? There's a guy in the Nashville area not too long ago, a few years ago, was discovered having a relationship that was someone who wasn't his wife. And when he weighed what was going to happen, he got in his car in the church parking lot, shot himself in the head. That's not the answer. The answer is to have safeguards to keep barriers and distance between you and the opposite sex. And it's been mentioned already, but counseling, you don't see a woman by yourself in counseling. There are times when I'll have, this is just one of my policies, I won't visit with a woman more than once without her husband. I mean, I may have an office full of people, and I'm in my part of the office with this woman, but just once I'll talk with her without her husband. If he won't come the second time, then we're done. Because I'll tell you what can happen. You see, she's obviously having some marriage problems. She's vulnerable. She's looking for her husband to be what he's not. And there you are, sitting there listening to every word she says. You're paying attention. You're showing empathy and sympathizing with her. You're everything that he isn't. And that, because of the confusion and the depression and the vulnerability, that can lead to things that, lead in tragedy. You can probably hold both hands up and start counting preachers that have been ruined because they didn't take precaution in this area. And it's not just preachers, but it's their wives and their children and the cause of Christ is destroyed because of that. Give great care. Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 6, or chapter 5 and chapter 6, probably be a good chapter, couple chapters to read every now and then about adultery and the pain that it can cause and the lurement of it. Be very cautious. Here's something else. In your ministry, as you deal with churches, focus on children. You know, when Neil was talking a little bit ago, so much of what he was saying, he was touching on things that I'm saying. But I want you to see something on this. Focus on children. My dad has, you know, he's been preaching 60 years. He's got shoeboxes full of little drawings and cards and all these things that little children have made him. He's 79 years old right now, but kids run to him. And they want to talk to him, and they want to, it should be that way. And I want my ministry, I want to relate. When I go to a place in a gospel meeting, you know, it's one of those things, preachers, you guys know, you go to a place, they send you through the line first, you and the kids. And so then if you sit down all by yourself, then everybody else saying, I'm not sitting by a preacher, somebody else can sit down there by him. And so you're sitting at an empty table for the whole lunch, you know, until the preacher, the local preacher, goes through the line and sits down with you. I decided a long time ago, I'm not doing that anymore. So the kids will go through, I'll go through, and I sit down with the kids, and I have lunch with the kids. And we talk, and we laugh, you know, people will come up to me afterward and say, I've never seen anything like that. You're sitting with the kids today. Yeah, yeah. And it may be, I mean, I relate on their level a little bit better than other. There may be something to that. But I want the kids to come to me. I want them to have a rapport with me. At Knoxville, you know, I do, well, kids will bring me drawings, they'll show me their stuff, that's the way it's supposed to be. Do you remember in Matthew chapter 18, Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me." The disciples were trying to shoo them off. But I want you to see something that isn't recorded in Matthew, but it's recorded in Mark's account that gives, well, a whole different picture on this. Because in my mind's eye, I can see Jesus sitting there and these little kids coming up and trying to get on his lap or something, and these disciples pulling them back and everything. And Jesus just says, you know, "Let the little children come." Kind of like that. That's the way I envision it. Mark's account says that he said, "Let the little children come to me," with great indignation. Do you sound a little different when you're really mad than when you're just talking? This was a big deal to Jesus. And he didn't just say, "Let the little children come to me." With great indignation, he said, "Let the little children come to me." Man, that tells why. Well, you get glimpses of God every day in the innocence and purity of children. They show us how to live. They show us how to be like God, because they are like God. For of such is the kingdom of heaven. We need to make children priorities in our ministry, because they help us and will teach us what it means to be God-like. But even beyond that, and this is, you know, maybe you say it's self-serving, but that's not the motive behind it. But I tell you, those kids that I pay attention to and come running to me and so forth, what do you think their mom and dad think of me? Boy, I'm the best thing in the world to them. He pays attention to my children. He likes my children. He bought my child an art drawing book so that he can draw. He knew he likes art. And just things like, you win parents through their children. And so, I mean, that's a self-serving side of it, but that's not why you do it. Do it because that's what Jesus did, and that's what he's called us to do. Don't let children be a distraction. Just those annoying little things that run around and trip you up when you're not looking. Don't hold kids at arm's length. Get down on their level. Talk to them. Encourage them. Because, listen, if all I am to children in the congregation is a suit and a tie, when they get old enough to have problems where they need to talk to somebody, I doubt if they'll come to me. I want them to be able to come to me, to know that we have a relationship and that they can talk to me about their problems. Also, as I mentioned, don't engage in playful banter that diminishes the respect for your work. What a job, man, only 3 hours a week. Oh, wow, you guys have it made. You ever hear stuff like that? I'm telling you, I don't engage in that. And people can, listen, I have a pretty good sense of humor. I like to laugh a lot. Nobody's going to accuse me of being, you know, a stiff. But when it comes to that, I don't get ugly, but I just don't, that means five, right? Okay. I don't get ugly, but I make it clear I'm not going to go down that road. And it's not a personal thing. It's not your disrespecting me. It's God's scheme. It's his plan. And it's through the foolishness of preaching, the message preached, that God chose to save man. And we need more preachers, not less. And if we allow a congregation to use the preacher as just, you know, the object of all their jokes, what are those young people going to do when they grow up? Are they going to be what mom and dad make fun of? Are they going to aspire to what only is held in contempt and ridicule? Not a chance. I don't want to be a part of that. And so when somebody says something to me, I don't laugh it off. I don't engage them. I just kind of give them one of those funny, like, "Are you kidding me?" kind of looks. I don't say anything, but it's enough to make the point. And I don't have to deal with that kind of stuff. And therefore, the congregation doesn't have to deal with it. And that builds a healthy respect for the work. Also, spend time with your family. You need time away from your work. Last week for me, I had over 45 hours in by Tuesday. We had some hospital situations. I didn't get home till 3 o'clock in the morning. Sunday morning, I get up and go to the office at 5 o'clock every Sunday. It's just been my practice for years, and I didn't get home till 3 o'clock in the morning that night. And then Monday, I'd been out, worked all day, went out visiting with the elders straight from the end of work, and then when I was dropping them off, I got a phone call, had to go back to the hospital that I'd been to 3 times that day, and got home about midnight. And that was just Monday, and then Tuesday, I had 45 hours in by Tuesday. That's the exception rather than the rule, but it needs to be the exception rather than the rule. You can always fill your time and do more, but your children need you. You know, take time. Listen, I go on dates with my daughters. One's married now. I have a 12-year-old. I mean, it's official. We get dressed up, and I take her out to the car. I don't let her open her car door. I open the car door for her. I want to show her how to be treated when she does go on a date someday. And we go out to eat, and Kim stays at home. She's not invited. It's just me and my daughter. And we have a good time. A couple weeks ago, I took my daughter. She's getting to that age where it's a little uncomfortable right now. You know, it's like, Dad, you know, this is embarrassing. But soon she'll be past that phase, and it'll be one of those things where she remembers. My son, go to camp. I am not a camper, but I have gone to camp for the last 15 years because of my kids. Bed's too short, covers too narrow, from Isaiah. I can relate, but I go because it's what my kids need to see. Don't miss their activities, whether it's their ball games or band performances, their skits, whatever it is, be there. And make that a priority. When we moved to Knoxville, one of the considerations, I had lived in Glasgow, Kentucky for 21 years, and I have a couple minutes? Okay. I lived in Glasgow, Kentucky for 21 years. Our children were raised there, and the thought of, my son was a senior in high school, and Carnes came and talked to us about moving, and I wrote to him, I said, listen, just take my name out of it, because I'm not going to move when my son is like 5 months away from graduation. Just not going to do that to him. So I was willing to give up that job, but you know those elders said, we'll wait. We don't want you to come until your son graduates. Let's make the agreement now, and in 8 months, we'd like for you to move here. They respected my family in that regard. How many churches would do that? So, well, okay, well, if you won't come now, then we just don't have any use for you, and they look for somebody else. But I hope my son appreciated that and saw that too, because I wanted him to know you're important, and we're taking you into consideration in this move as well. But anyway, there's more I don't have time to do, but hopefully this has been valuable, some practical things, maybe one or two points that will help you to remember. Listen, we do have the greatest job in the world. We get to go around every day and brag on Jesus. How can you beat that? Appreciate your attention.